Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. All right, we're going to start with some articles from AARP, the magazine, and this was in Coverall article about people who have been shot, and it's called The Survivors. America has become so accustomed to mass shootings that we've developed a routine. There's the shock, the horror, the memorials, the grief. But for those who've survived such horrific attacks, little about life is routine anymore. So let's look at a couple of more survivors. Polly Shepard, 80, retired nurse in Florence, South Carolina. Date of the shooting, June 17, 2015. Wednesday evening, Bible study at Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston was just ending, and the dozen parishioners in the basement of the 200-year-old church had closed their eyes for the final prayer. The 13th person in the room, a newcomer, who had participated in the group's discussion, then pulled out a gun and started shooting. 9 people were killed, and 2 others, who were uninjured, feigned death. When the gunman approached Shepard, sheltering beneath a table, she met his eye. "Did I shoot you yet?" he asked her. "No," she replied. "I'm not going to," he said. "I'm going to leave you here to tell the story." The self-declared white supremacist fled and was later arrested during a traffic stop. For several months after the shooting, Polly Shepard was angry. It was a feeling she didn't understand. "Why are you so angry?" she asked herself. Then she realized, because God left you here. You didn't have a scratch on you. But you can't be the one to hold all this madness. She knew she had to forgive the shooter. Otherwise, she says, it's like you're drinking poison. She also knew forgiveness wouldn't be easy. But her 14 years as a nurse at the Charleston County Jail had helped her learn to withhold judgment. You meet people you think are guilty, but they're not guilty. And you can meet guilty people who are so sweet, she says. If the person is a murderer, you treat them the same as anybody else. People have asked her whether she would have been able to provide care for the shooter in jail if the shooting had happened before she retired. Yes, she says. I don't think he would enjoy working with me, though. Shepard says she has forgiven the shooter, but there is no forgetting. The skittering light of the handgun's laser, the sound of the shooter's boots, the feeling of checking for a friend's pulse and finding none, those memories will be with her for life. And Shepard is indeed here to tell the story. She regularly tells it to state senators, one of whose colleagues, the Reverend Clementa Pinckney, died in the shooting, to advocate for a hate crime law in South Carolina, which is one of only 2 states without one. Shepard told her story at the 2016 Democratic National Convention, where gun safety was a defining issue. The anti-gun control candidate from the other party won the presidency. Shepard admits to getting discouraged sometimes. Being the memory keeper of such a horrific event is not an easy thing, she says. You feel like you're out there all by yourself. But those feelings are part of what keeps her going. There are many survivors like her, and Shepard wants them to know that they are not alone. Next, we have Abby Clements, 56, teacher and gun safety advocate, Western Connecticut. Date of shooting, December 14, 2012. With gunfire echoing in the halls and boots pounding on the roof of Sandy Hook Elementary School, second-grade teacher Clements huddled with her class underneath the coats and backpacks that hung on a classroom wall. She tried to keep the children calm by reading and singing. The gunman didn't make it into her classroom that day, but by the end, 20 children and 6 adults at the school had been killed before the shooter turned the gun on himself. The words flow easily when Abby Clements talks about working to include teachers' voices in the public conversation about gun violence, but telling her own story? That's the part that's hard, she says. 12 years have passed since the shooting. The depth of survivor grief is immense, Clement says. I choose to talk about what happened because the public tends to move on from these tragedies, and those who experience them or love someone who has don't have that luxury. Layered on top of that is guilt. You survived something because a shooter turned left instead of right. What do you do with that? Clemens experiences some of the effects of trauma. The hypervigilance, the flood of panic and flush of heat in a crowd. The racing heart when she feels trapped, like in the dentist chair. It just sneaks up on me, she says. She says she has been sustained by friendships with other survivors, including teachers who survived the 1999 Columbine high school shooting. Therapy also helped. Especially effective, she says, was eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy, EMDR, which uses bilateral brain stimulation, usually side-to-side eye movements, and taps on the arms and legs to change the way a traumatic memory is stored in the brain. About 6 months after the shooting, Clement's teenage daughter invited her to a meeting of gun violence prevention activists. As soon as she got to the meeting, she knew immediately that these were my people, she says. My place was around other survivors and activists who wanted to make change. Almost 3 years ago, Clements and two fellow educators followed the nonprofit Teachers Unify to End Gun Violence to give a voice to educators and school staff, both current and retired, within the discussion about curbing school shootings. She still feels flashes of guilt for surviving and even for having resources that she knows other survivors of gun violence don't. These flashes of guilt are a reminder of the indelible mark a mass shooting leaves on the brain, bullet wound or not. Now we're moving on to the new Psychology Now, Take Control of Your Mind for a Happier, Healthier Life. I'm going to start a new section today entitled Understanding Dissociative Disorders. Underdiagnosed and rarely discussed, dissociative disorders are surprisingly common, though you may not recognize them for what they are. And there again, this is a fairly long article, so we'll just get started on it today. The mind has many ways of coping when it's under extreme stress, whether that's due to a particular incident or a traumatic experience, or as part of a mental health condition such as anxiety. One of the ways that the mind might cope is through dissociation, which can leave a person feeling disconnected from their thoughts, feelings, own identity, surroundings, and/or memories. What are dissociative disorders? Dissociative disorders can present in several ways and for different lengths of time. Some people experience feelings of dissociation for just a few hours or days, where others can feel disconnected for much longer, for weeks or even months. In more extreme cases, these disorders can last many years. Symptoms may vary from feelings of disconnection from yourself and your environment, to forgetting certain information or memories and feeling unsure about who you are, having multiple identities that are distinct from each other. Some dissociative disorders can lead to feeling less or no physical pain. While dissociative disorders are mental health conditions, they lead to a range of both psychological and physical problems. For some, these periods of dissociation are triggered by traumatic events from childhood as a way of coping. For others, they come on later in life after personal experiences that are particularly stressful or painful to process. These may be linked to other mental health conditions that increase levels of stress too. Whatever the trigger or type, dissociative disorders can be scary to experience, hard to explain, and difficult to diagnose. They are not talked about as often as other more common mental health conditions, and it can be a very lonely experience as a result. There are resources and services that can help, which you can see in our box out within this feature. we'll go through those later. Thanks to people like presenters and television personality Jamie Lading, openly speaking out about dissociative disorders, we can slowly begin to break the stigma surrounding these complex conditions. The first step is understanding what these conditions are, the signs and symptoms, and having access to the right resources and treatment. Dissociation is an umbrella term that covers different types of dissociative disorders, which have their own set of symptoms, though there is often overlap. You may be most familiar with a condition called dissociative identity disorder, DID, which used to be called multiple personality disorder, though that term is an older definition and a lot more is now known about the disorder. The reason you may have heard of it is because it has featured in numerous films and TV series as a plot point, using a character's DID to portray varying personalities to feed into the narrative. In the late 1990s, Fight Club rose to popularity and revealed at its climax that the unnamed narrator and the impulsive creator of the eponymous Fight Club, Tyler Durden, were the same person. While these cultural representations might be helpful in highlighting such mental health disorders, they are rarely accurate. DID is most often triggered by intense childhood trauma. In Fight Club, the disorder is used to highlight the psychological trauma caused by modern materialistic culture and its trappings, to make a statement rather than to portray the true complexities of such a condition. The same can be said of earlier cultural examples, such as The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, or Psycho, which may contribute more to the misinformation and misunderstandings around this condition. More recently, the 2022 Marvel television series Moon Knight features DID central to its narrative. However, the team behind the series have said that they spent a lot of time researching DID to ensure an accurate depiction on screen. Having multiple distinct personalities is one of the main symptoms of DID. These identities are usually identified by their own names and can have distinct mannerisms, accents, or way of talking. They may present as different ages or genders. Each identity might have a different understanding of their own history, particularly when DID is in response to a traumatic childhood event. An identity may be created to escape from a difficult reality, omitting certain events. And, as such, someone with DID is likely to experience memory gaps around personal information and historical events and feel uncertain about their own identity. Often those with DID will have an awareness of the other identities, but sometimes have an understanding of one identity that they feel is their core or host identity. It is a complex psychiatric condition thought to be diagnosed in around 15% of the global population. A number of people in the public eye have talked openly about their struggles with DID. Actress Roseanne Barr said in 1994 that she suffered from DID with multiple distinct personalities. She said at the time that her DID was caused by alleged childhood abuse. Former NFL player Herschel Walker has also talked widely about his experience with DID, writing a book in the 2008 called Breaking Free, My Life with Dissociative Identity Disorder, in which he reveals that he had a high number of alter egos, some that caused dangerous behaviors. And we will continue with this article next time. Now, going on to AARP The Bulletin and their cover story, our world has become more digital, virtual, and automated. At the same time, the post-pandemic economy can at times feel unstable. How do we navigate this new landscape and make the system work for us? Here are some ways to outsmart the system. Pharmacy closures. Drugstores are closing retail locations. What options do I have? Between 2019 and the first half of 2024, More than 7,000 chain and independent drugstores closed in the U.S., according to a University of Pittsburgh study. CVS and Rite Aid have been closing hundreds of stores, and Walgreens announced plans for about 1,200 closures over the next 3 years. In addition, according to a February 2024 survey, a third of independent drugstore owners said they may also shut their doors before year's end. Outsmart the system. Don't limit yourself to a single pharmacy choice. If you can, sign up for a health plan that gives you more pharmacy options, advises Dima Kataro, an associate professor at the University of Southern California Mann School of Pharmacy and lead researcher in the 2019 study. If you're on Medicare and need more options, you can switch your Part D plan coverage during the next open enrollment period starting in October of 2025. People tend to be as loyal to their pharmacist as they are their physicians, said Ray Walker, divisional director for the Medicare Assistance Program at the Oklahoma Insurance Department. But if that preferred pharmacy isn't going to be there in 6 months, it could create hardship. Request a special Medicare enrollment period. If your pharmacy closes and the next closest in your plan is miles away, you might not be able to wait to get on a new plan, Walker says. If a person finds themselves in this situation, they can contact 1-800-MEDICARE. That's 1-800-633-4227, and request an exceptional circumstance special enrollment period, SEP, to switch to a different plan. You can order by mail. This can be especially helpful for drugs that you take regularly since they get delivered to your doorstep. Look for a mail order or online pharmacy covered by your health plan, says Elvin T. Price, director of the Geriatric Pharmaceutical Therapy Program at Virginia Commonwealth University. Next, unexpected medical bills. Where did these charges come from? Can I avoid surprise billing? 43% of American adults have received at least one problem medical bill in the previous 5 years, according to a 2022 national survey by KFF, a nonprofit health policy research group. Billing troubles can be overcharges or invoices for services not received, already paid, thought were covered by health insurance, or those you just can't afford. Problem bills are a big reason why 5.1 million older adults have medical debt that's gone to a collection agency, according to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Outsmart the system. Speak up. About 3/4 of adults who challenged a mistake or unaffordable bill got help, according to an August 2024 University of Southern California survey. The results include bill corrections, payment plans, financial assistance, a cut price, or a bill cancellation. Ask for an estimate. Before an elective procedure or a long-term potentially expensive treatment, get an estimate of the charges, said medical billing specialist Martine Browsey, owner of Advimid Pro in Culver City, California. An estimate is not a final bill, but it can help you plan ahead. Don't pay right away. That first bill you get says 15 to 30 days after a medical visit may not have been processed by your health insurer yet, and so it may not reflect what you owe after insurance pays, Browser said. If you shouldn't pay a bill until after you see a final explanation of benefits from your insurance company or Medicare, she says. If you overpay an early bill, you can get a refund, but that can be time-consuming. Compare the bill to insurance coverage. The explanation of benefits will tell you whether a medical bill was processed correctly, says Jenny Nolan, an independent patient financial advocate and owner of Clear Healthcare Advocacy in Carmel, Indiana. Common discrepancies that deserve a call to your provider include duplicate charges, coding errors, in-network charges billed as an out-of-network rate, denied services, and bills never sent to your insurer. Challenge surprise ambulance fees. Consumers typically have no say over whether the EMT crew that responds to a call is in their network. That gap costs Americans $129 million a year, according to a 2020 study. These bills can be thousands of dollars, Nolan says. Don't automatically pay that inflated out-of-network ambulance bill. Instead, Nolan suggests, negotiate a lower rate based on published Medicare coverage rates for your area, available at cms.gov/Medicare/payment/fee-schedules/ambulance. A standard offer is double the Medicare rate. Social Security help. The Social Security Administration says customer service is improving. Really? How can I get the assistance I need? Figuring out Social Security can be difficult, as can actually reaching someone to answer your questions. The Social Security Administration has lost more than 10,000 workers since 2010, while the number of Americans it serves has risen by more than 13 million people, according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. The average phone wait time in the first 7 months of 2024 was roughly 30 minutes. That's an improvement over the 2023 average of about 36 minutes, but still longer than the roughly 20-minute average callers could expect in 2019. Outsmart the system. Be prepared. Before calling or visiting a Social Security office, do as much research as you can on the agency's website. Consumers don't always know the rules, so they don't ask questions congruent with the rules, says Philip Mueller, co-author of Get What's Yours, The Secrets to Maxing Out Your Social Security. Know when to call. Mondays and the days after holidays are the busiest times for Social Security reps. If a matter can wait, call on a Friday, especially the best day of the week, to get assistance by telephone. The agency also recommends calling early in the morning. Consider alternative locations. If you need to make an in-person visit to a Social Security office, check appointment availability in suburban areas, which tend to be less busy, says Kevin Chancellor, a certified Social Security claiming strategist and CEO of Black Lab Financial Services. AARP resources. Get the latest news, expert advice, and answers to frequently asked questions about Social Security benefits at AARP's Social Security Resource Center. That's aarp.org/retirement/social-security. Or watch informative videos explaining Social Security benefits at youtube.com/@AARP Answers. And we have time for one more of these today. Medicare. Medicare Advantage enrollment has been growing. Is this the year I should switch from original Medicare? You would not be alone. An increasing number of Medicare beneficiaries chose the plans from private companies, rising from 19% of eligible Medicare beneficiaries in 2007 to 54% in 2024, according to KFF. If you're on Original Medicare, you can switch to a Medicare Advantage plan, but generally not until the open enrollment period. Outsmart the system. Consider the copays. When shopping for a Medicare Advantage plan, monthly premiums are only part of the story. In fact, two-thirds of Advantage plans charge zero premiums other than the Part B premium. In the 2024 year plan, according to KFF, and remember that old axiom, you don't get something for nothing. Be sure to check the copays. If you have a 5 to 7 day hospital stay and your copay is $200 to $300 every day, that could add up pretty quickly, says Meredith Freed, a KFF senior policy manager. Understand provider networks. The majority of medical providers accept original Medicare, and you generally don't need a referral to see a specialist. But Medicare Advantage plans use the provider networks, so make sure you can see the doctors you like. Many people come from employer plans that have network providers, and they may not find it as big of an issue if that's something they're already familiar with. Prepare to for authorizations and appeals. Advantage plans have more prior authorization requirements than original Medicare. We found out in our surveys that prior authorizations does serve as a barrier to care for some beneficiaries in Medicare. Advantage getting the care they need, says Gretchen Jacobson, Vice President of Medicare for the Commonwealth Fund. Service denials aren't all that common. In 2022, 7.4% of the 46 million Medicare Advantage prior authorization requests were denied in whole or in part, according to KFF. But you can appeal a denial. 83% of those appealed were partially or fully overturned. AARP resources. AARP has an educational materials to help Medicare beneficiaries and their families make informed decisions. Check out the AARP Medicare Explained YouTube series at aarp.org/Medicare videos. Medicare webinars and online learning at aarp.org/Medicare learning and at the Medicare Resource Center at aarp.org/Medicare. Now, in the few seconds we have left, let's look at some of the wins for AARP in 2024. AARP fought hard to be the first minimum staffing levels for nurses' homes that receive Medicare and Medicaid funds. Wish of a lifetime from AARP helped nearly 300 older adults fulfill their long-time deferred dreams. And 5 AARP reward users have saved over $30 million this year alone. And older adults participated in Senior Planet's classes and programs more than 600,000 times. Well, folks, I've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. To be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.